few months back, and on the recommendation, the strong urging and recommendation of my wife, I contacted the sleep clinic, University of Wisconsin Sleep Clinic, and signed up to go through a test for sleep apnea. And it turns out that I went and stayed overnight, and I was tested, and in fact, I have sleep apnea. And so I've gone through a process, and for the last couple of months, I've been dealing with that, and also with the equipment that I was given to help me deal with sleep apnea. So we'll talk about that a little bit, and also answer your questions about sleep apnea: what it is, how do we treat it, what do you do? Dr. Ruth Benka directs the Wisconsin Sleep Laboratory and Clinic. She's also a professor in the departments of psychology and psychiatry at the UW-Madison, past president of the Sleep Research Society and the Associated Professional Sleep Society. So it's great to have her back. Again, thank you for listening in. And I hope you'll join in with your... Do you suffer from sleep apnea? How long has it been an issue for you or your spouse? A lot of times it's the spouse, I think, as it was in my case, who more or less forces the other to get in and look for treatment. And so call in 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page and you can post there at the Larry Mueller Show. And Dr. Ruth Benka, welcome back.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Great to have you. Let's go back to first to the medical definition of sleep apnea. What is, how do you define it?
Well, in general, sleep apnea refers to stopping breathing while you're asleep. The most common kind of sleep apnea is obstructive sleep apnea, which means that while you're asleep, you try to breathe, but the air just isn't coming in and out because the upper part of your airway, kind of behind the back of the base of your tongue, closes off.
Mm-hmm.
That's unfortunately an increasingly prevalent problem, and a lot of people with sleep apnea don't know they have it.
Yeah, unfortunately, and in my case, my wife Renee said, "You're stopping breathing, for goodness sakes, when you're sleeping." And I said, "Well, I didn't notice that."
Yeah. Well, that's actually an interesting issue. We have a lot of patients who are sent in by their spouses or bed partners, and it's often something that other people notice before you do. But there are some signs and symptoms that are often present in people who have sleep apnea, besides the fact that they snore loudly. They, of course, may not be aware of that. Everybody else is. But people with sleep apnea are often excessively sleepy or fatigued during the day. Not always, but frequently. They may have problems with attention and concentration. Can have a lot of other health problems that can occur as a result of sleep apnea that they may not realize, such as high blood pressure and other heart problems or increased risks for strokes or heart attacks. Concern, again, is to be able to recognize when people might be at risk for this and to get treatment for it.
And typically what causes? We have an idea what causes it?
Well, we have some ideas of certainly risk factors for sleep apnea. So obviously people who snore, that's sort of the biggest tip-off that you might have sleep apnea. They're the symptoms, first of all, snoring, daytime sleepiness, sometimes waking up with headaches in the morning, sometimes just having disrupted sleep. One of the biggest causes nowadays is obesity. Mm-hmm. So if you're overweight, you're at much greater risk of having apnea, and probably about half of the sleep apnea that we deal with could be solely attributed to people being overweight, and in many cases, weight loss is the one curative treatment for it. But other factors can contribute to apnea, such as anything that blocks the upper airway. So, for example, in children, if they have large tonsils or adenoids, they can have actually fairly significant sleep apnea, or adults.
So even kids?
It's and unfortunately also as kids are more frequently overweight or obese, that contributes to their apnea too. But many people just structurally have smaller airways. They may have large tongues, the soft palate may be enlarged and hang down more to the back of the throat. It may just be a narrow airway. People who have kind of receding jaw lines, which will cause there to be less space at the back of the airway, that can be a factor. Other upper airway problems. So some of it is just kind of the anatomy you're born with, and certainly sometimes we see apnea in families because of certain facial features that can contribute to obstruction higher up.
We got an email from Cheryl wondering, how exactly does being overweight contribute to it, and how thin do you have to be to avoid or to treat it?
Okay, that's a good question. Probably the risk of having problems breathing during sleep increases the more that you weigh. There are actually two kinds of problems that are related to obesity. One is the obstruction that occurs at the back of the throat, and that's just because one of the places when we start to put on a lot of weight that it goes is in the neck. And so people actually who have larger necks, we know, are at risk for apnea. So men who have a 17-inch neck, so that would be a 17-inch shirt size or larger, that increases the risk. And women, if their neck is 16 inches or more in diameter, that would be at the base of the neck, it's increased. So one thing is fat deposits will go into the neck and further serve to close off the airway. The other thing that happens, particularly in people who are very overweight, is that when they are asleep at night, they can't move air in and out of their lungs as well. Not necessarily so much because they're having an obstruction at the back of the throat, but they just can't expand the lung volume as well, because normally during the daytime when we're standing or sitting, the diaphragm, of course, has to drop to expand the lungs, and gravity sort of helps that. And when we're lying in bed at night, it's harder to create that extra space in the lungs, so that the breathing becomes very shallow. And some people can actually drop their oxygen levels in their blood quite significantly, just because they can't move enough air in and out at night due to excessive body weight.
Dr. Ruth Benka, our guest today, talking with her today about the health impacts of sleep apnea, what it is, how to treat it. I wonder if you have an issue with it yourself or a relative who does. Maybe some questions about it. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or a comment there. What about the health implications of this? If you have sleep apnea, we talk a little bit more about.
Well, I think it's important to look at it from both aspects. Oh, so sleep apnea can worsen a number of other medical issues, but also people with certain medical disorders are at much higher risk of having sleep apnea. So it can kind of work both ways. So let's start out by talking about what the health effects are of sleep apnea. So, of course, besides being sleepy and not having your brain so work so well during the day because you don't get good quality sleep. So sleep apnea, and a lot of this work actually was done by Terry Young here at UW and her colleagues, and probably some of the listeners may be part of that study, the Wisconsin Sleep Cohort Study. So we are actually in the place in the world that has probably done the most important epidemiologic study on the effects of sleep apnea, and that study's been going on for several decades now. So people who have sleep apnea are at greater risk of developing high blood pressure. They're at greater risk of having heart attacks or strokes. And they're, when the apnea is more severe, they're a greater risk of dying of almost any cause, but particularly cardiovascular disease and cerebrovascular disease. Now, we also know that certain medical disorders seem to be associated with a higher risk of having sleep apnea. So, of course, overweight is one of them, but also people who have type 2 diabetes. And for example, if you're overweight and have type 2 diabetes, there's a 75% chance you have sleep apnea.
Oh.
People with high blood pressure are at higher risk of having apnea, of course, because it contributes. And some of the recent studies have been showing how people with depression have higher rates of having apnea. So if you have depression, you're more likely to have apnea. And if you have apnea, you're more likely to be depressed. And finally, a variety of heart diseases can be associated with increased risk of apnea, in particular atrial fibrillation. And we know that people who have atrial fibrillation, who have untreated apnea, are more likely to have a recurrence of their arrhythmia. So it's always important, if you have atrial fibrillation, that you've been screened for possible apnea. People with heart failure also have very high rates of sleep apnea. And those are populations that we, you know, really try to screen more carefully.
You wonder sometimes if one doesn't cause the other. And for example, depression, if you're depressed to begin with, if maybe the sleep apnea first caused the depression.
Well,
or the other way around.
Yeah, that's an interesting issue in terms of what's going on there. What we're now starting to understand is that both depression and sleep apnea are associated with changes in the brain. And there are particular areas of the brain that are involved in mood regulation that seem to shrink down both in major depression and in apnea. So it may be that the repeated drop in oxygen level at night causes damage to certain parts of the brain. And again, sleep apnea patients with severe chronic apnea do have changes in brain structure and function that have now been identified in various studies.
So the losing oxygen, really, over time, that will have an effect. That really does have an effect.
That can cause brain damage over
a period of time.
For a long period of time, yes. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Ruth Benka, our guest today, as we talk with her about sleep apnea. I'm Larry Mueller. News coming up here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. A lot of us think snoring is a common occurrence, and while irritating, nothing serious. But in fact, it can be an indication of a serious condition, sleep apnea. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad you could join us today on the Ideas Network. Dr. Ruth Benka is the director of the Wisconsin Sleep Laboratory and Clinic. She's with us today until 12:30 to talk about diagnosing and treating sleep apnea and why it's so important. Have you been told that you snore and sometimes gasp for air? Have you been tested or treated for sleep apnea? How has it affected your life? Join in by calling 1-800-642-1234 or go to our Facebook page. You can leave a comment or a question there. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. And if you like the page while you're there, we will send you regular updates on upcoming show topics. So I hope you'll do that. And stay tuned. We'll be back with our guest right after this look at the news. Thanks for listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, talking today with Dr. Ruth Benka, director of the Wisconsin Sleep Laboratory and Clinic. She's a professor at UW-Madison in the departments of psychology and psychiatry, and past president of the Sleep Research Society, among other things. And great to have her along to talk about sleep apnea. High on my list because I have sleep apnea. And her group is treating me for it and successfully. So it's great to be able to share what my experience is and also to let you know what can be done. And certainly if you have questions, I hope you'll join us. 1-800-642-1234, the number to call. And lots of people online, as a matter of fact. So let's go right to the phones, Dr. Benka, and talk to Holly from Detsonville. Hi, Holly.
Good morning, or good afternoon, I should say.
Good afternoon.
I have sleep apnea, and I've been fighting with the machine for a couple of years to the point of I almost chucked it and gave up because I inhale so much air into my stomach, so much for the quality of sleep when you wake up at 3 in the morning like a colicky horse. What am I doing wrong?
Well, I think it's important that if you've had this for a few years that somebody checks to make sure that the pressure setting is correct. So one issue is that maybe the pressure is turned up a little too high. It may also be a matter of what kind of mask is being used. I mean, I think certainly CPAP is, which is the treatment, and it refers to continuous positive airway pressure, which is basically blowing air in your nose or your nose and mouth to keep your airway open, is one of those kind of love-hate things, I think, for most people. On the one hand, it is a treatment that works really well for sleep apnea, and it reduces most of the health risks. And in general, it's one of the safest treatments we have in medicine. It's safer than almost any pill a doctor is going to prescribe you for anything. It's safer than having a procedure, but it can be a nuisance for some people. It can be hard to get used to, and it can cause some of these problems like swallowing air. One thing is to, you know, work with your home healthcare company, the company that supplies your machine to you.
I haven't been much help at all.
Yeah. The other thing is to go in to see, have you gone in to see a sleep specialist?
Well, I did, and that's what they set me up with, but I just...
But it's been a couple of years,
but
right?
But you need to go back to them. And so you go back to the clinic to see the sleep doctor, bring your equipment with you, and... have them reassess what can be done to help with that problem. Again, that's, I think, the really important issue that I try to get across to people is that if you've got sleep apnea, it's really important that we try to figure out a way to treat it. And so if CPAP is a good therapy for you, we try to make sure that it's comfortable for you and that you can use it and you're not having problems with it. If you can't manage CPAP no matter what, to discuss other possible treatments. And there are some other things that can be done depending on the individual and the situation. But the worst thing to do is to put your CPAP machine in a closet and just
forget about
the whole thing. I mean, if you're having trouble with it, go in and see a sleep specialist until you've got something that's working for you.
Good luck. Thank you, Holly, for calling. Appreciate your call. Joseph in Johnson Creek, your turn. Hi.
Hi, how are you today?
Great.
Good, good. My question is, I have been diagnosed with moderate sleep apnea. I had the machine. I have pretty much a claustrophobic person, and I couldn't tolerate the mask. And I tried to do it, and I got a mask where it just comes down over your forehead and just goes under the nostrils,
right,
which was really nice. But the problem is that one's real easily knocked away in your sleep,
mm-hmm,
too. And I think I still had issues. But here's the main question is my nose breathing, you know, and I don't know how much you guys look into this when you fit someone with a mask, because I went to an ear, nose, and throat doctor to look into maybe surgery and
mm-hmm
whatnot. But because I'm so thick, that's out of the question. I'd probably best thing is to lose weight. But through my nose, my breathing was pretty bad. Deviated septum. He recommended an endoscopic sinus surgery, septoplasty, and a turbinate reduction.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if I kind of wanted to get a second opinion by having you today is like getting one. What do you think the chances are that this would help the breathability through the mask? Maybe the mask, I'm pulling it off because it's not letting the air through. And that's why the doctor kind of said, you know, it could be, you know, it's not black and white. So what do you think about that?
Well, the issues with surgery are, first of all, I would never recommend surgery over the air without, you know, seeing someone. But certainly anything that is impeding or obstructing the airflow higher up, like through the nose, is going to sometimes make it more difficult to use the CPAP just because the pressure might need to be higher.
Mm.
And in general, for example, people who have problems with snoring, one of the first things we try to do is to make sure that they can breathe well through their nose. So congestion in the nose is always an issue. And sometimes if there's an anatomic problem like a seriously deviated septum, sometimes surgery is done, and sometimes that can be helpful. It may not totally treat or eliminate the sleep apnea. And again, if you have some significant weight to lose, that's important as well. But it might make it a little less severe or make it possible for you to manage with a little lower pressure of CPAP, so not quite as strong air needing to blow through. Really, the important thing is to get an opinion from an ear, nose, and throat surgeon who has experience treating patients with sleep apnea, and if in doubt, you know, get a second opinion from another ENT specialist just to see if there's some agreement.
There are other types of surgery that can be done. I got an email here from Jim who wonders about your position on surgery. He had it. It was, mm-hmm, he said it was a kind of disaster for him.
Yeah, so. I think, again, It really depends on the nature of the problem that is being corrected with surgery. So if we're talking about someone with huge tonsils and adenoids, and I sometimes see adults who have gigantic tonsils, it's not just for kids, that surgery can sometimes be very helpful. Some of the other surgeries that just go in the back of the throat and try to clear out a lot of the sort of excess tissue are not always that successful. Mm. And a reputable ear, nose, and throat surgeon will, you know, give you the correct information as to how likely it is or not that the surgery is going to be helpful. But again, surgeries that will, if you have a lot of restricted airflow through the nose or very large tonsils, or those kinds of things, surgeries may be helpful. There are some other surgeries that are being tested now for apnea, but I really think of surgery as more of a last resort. There are other things that can be done, and the problem with surgery is once you've had something removed, you can't put it back. So we always want to be cautious about advocating a surgical solution.
Thanks again for calling, Joe. Danielle in Milwaukee, on to you. Hi.
Hi, I'm a voice teacher, and my husband's been using the CPAP machine for several years, and I notice when his posture is bad, his breathing gets really noisy when he's awake, and I keep telling him that I think some of the training that vocal teachers use, like with deep breathing exercises and keeping your throat open, might help him. But I'm wondering, are there any published materials on this kind of therapy that I might be able to use to convince him, like from a third party rather than his wife nagging him?
Well, I guess they're about that. That's a great question and comment. And there's about three things I'd like to say in response. First of all, if your husband is having noisy breathing related to a change in posture while he's awake, somebody should take a look at his airway because he shouldn't be obstructing while awake. The second issue is the question about, are there things to do to improve the musculature of the upper airway? And in fact, there are. There's been some interesting work out of, I think, Australia, where there's an instrument, an Aboriginal instrument called the didgeridoo, which is a very long horn. And there have been a couple of studies, not from the U.S., that suggest that people who learn to play this instrument, which require strong upper airway, you know, the muscles at the back of the throat there in the upper airway, actually decrease the severity of their apnea. And so there are now people who are thinking about, you know, are there exercises or things that can be done to improve this? That's probably better for people with milder apnea.
Okay.
And the final posture thing I want to say, which is I think really important, is that apnea and even snoring in a lot of individuals can be very associated with your sleeping posture. And the worst posture for apnea or snoring is usually sleeping on your back. Because what happens is that when you're lying on your back, your tongue and all the soft tissues in your mouth sort of by the force of gravity fall back against the back of your throat, further narrowing that airway. And then when you take a breath in and you suck air in, you're actually sort of closing off the airway more. It's like putting your finger over the end of a straw and sucking in. So some people's apnea can be treated by strictly avoiding sleeping on their backs. And a sleep laboratory study should be able to tell someone if their apnea is positional and might be amenable to sleeping, simply changing your sleeping position.
Well, how would use of a pillow affect that?
Well, you know, pillow on your neck?
Well,
like a regular head pillow?
Yeah, a regular head pillow.
Well, of course, when you're sleeping on a pillow, depending on what position you're sleeping in and how you're bending your neck, that can actually sometimes make things worse or better. It just depends on, you know, which direction you're bending your neck. Oftentimes with apnea, having, you know, sort of a straight neck and having your head more inclined may be a little bit better. But again, the main thing is to stay off your back.
Mm-hmm. And you can, who was it that telling me that they have a little pocket in the back of their shirt and put a tennis ball in.
Right. There's a couple of ways you can stay off your back. Yeah, there's the famous T-shirt with the tennis balls in the back. Mm-hmm. You can just also get a really snugly fitting fanny pack and stuff that with, you know, tennis balls or baseballs or whatever, you know, something, and then you can't roll over on your back. And there's stuff you can buy online. Actually, for some of these things, we have information on our website. So for snoring and other kinds of approaches, I can give that website
address.
Yeah,
please do.
It's www.wisconsinsleep.org. So www.wisconsinsleep, all one word, .org.
And we have a link on our Facebook page, so at the Larry Mueller Show. So
right. And, I mean, there are a couple things on there. It's some of the recommendations for snoring. Also, we have a little quiz, a sleep apnea quiz, and there are some questions there. And I can – we don't – say it right on the first part, but if you answer three or more of those yes, you might be at a higher risk of having sleep apnea, and you might want to talk to your doctor about that.
And you have some studies on sleep apnea that you're, I mean, you've, for years and years, Wisconsin has sort of led the, I think, a lot of the great research, and you have studies now ongoing.
Right. Again, the Wisconsin sleep cohort study is still ongoing with, you know, really very interesting results about you know, what happens when you treat or don't treat sleep apnea and what sort of the natural history of it is. We have other studies going on at Wisconsin Sleep now, some of which patients are asked to participate in if they're interested in looking at how treating sleep apnea affects heart function. We're also doing some studies looking at alternatives to CPAP, such as wearing an oral appliance that moves your jaw forward instead of using CPAP. So there are other therapies out there that we're
looking at
and trying to see if we can help people breathe better while they're sleeping.
Angela in Platteville. Hi.
Hi. I have my main concern is the depression aspect. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to give you a little background here. I deal with chronic pain. I take narcotic pain medication for that. 2 years ago, I was diagnosed with atrial fibrillation. I take medications both for rate and rhythm, and we just increased the dosage on flecainide. A month ago, I was diagnosed with diastolic dysfunction. I am going to the sleep lab next week. Mm-hmm. I'm almost positive that I have sleep apnea. My concern is, and I do have very severe depression, and I'm already on one medication for that, and I'm resisting the notion of being on more meds. Once you get the sleep apnea under control, is there any data that shows that there can be a reversal or improvement in terms of the depression?
Well, that's a wonderful idea for a study, and I think it's an important one. I don't think anybody's done a long-term study with definitive information on that. But what we do know is that a lot of the symptoms of sleep apnea are very similar to the symptoms of depression, particularly kind of the lack of motivation, the lack of energy, the problems with attention and concentration. Not so much maybe sort of the sad mood and guilt or the, you know, really depressed mood type symptoms, but more that just kind of blah feeling, not, you know, really, you know, having optimism or motivation to do things. And that can get better with treating an apnea. And certainly in my own personal experience over the years, you know, I not infrequently see people who are thought to have treatment-resistant depression who actually have treatment-responsive apnea. And, of course, there can be situations of people who have apnea and we treat their apnea and they're, you know, they also have some depression. But there's so much overlap and also kind of the two disorders contributing to each other that, you know, one should always obviously treat the apnea. And there's certainly the possibility that that can lead to some improvement in how you're feeling. Again, it's not going to be overnight, but hopefully over time you should notice some overall improvement in your energy.
There you go.
That'd be good. My other question is, would it be let me start over. Could there be an improvement in the atrial fibrillation?
Yeah, that we do have data on. As I said earlier, people with atrial fibrillation and untreated sleep apnea are at greater risk for recurrence of the atrial fibrillation. And it should almost be the case that anybody with AFib should be, as I said, screened to make sure they don't have apnea, because that's such a kind of an easy fix instead of struggling with the fibrillation.
There you go.
Thanks for the information.
Yeah, and good luck, Angela. Thank you.
Yes, good luck.
Thank you very much for calling. Rick in Green Bay, thank you for calling. Hi.
Good afternoon. Appreciate the show.
Sure.
I've been diagnosed with moderate to severe apnea, and the biggest issue I've had is they give you the mask that goes over the nose and mouth, and that's the only kind of mask that the home health provider has to offer me. And I've tried probably 6-7 of different kinds of them, and I get very claustrophobic, struggle to fall asleep, and then I wake up in like almost a panic attack when I feel it on me. I wake up at any point during the night. So two things. Are there any other kind of masks that don't cover both your mouth and nose? And what are some other alternative treatments besides the CPAP?
Well, the mask that covers the nose and mouth is not the most typical one we use. Is there a reason that they gave you the full face mask rather than one that just goes over your nose?
That's what they had. And I asked because when I went back and said, I feel very claustrophobic with it over both. And if I could have one with my nose, and they said, this is what you need, this is what we have, so on and so forth.
Well, that's you should check with another home health company then. But the masks that people who have claustrophobia tend to do the best with are either the nasal pillows that someone mentioned earlier, and that's basically a very small mask that just kind of fits into your nostrils, so you don't have the sense of so much stuff on your face and there's nothing covering your mouth. There are also the smaller nasal masks, and some of those have the like the gel foam or the gel masks that are very comfortable. And if the issue is that you're opening your mouth frequently at night, they can always use a chin strap to help with that. Some people leak. But it doesn't sound like they tried any of those nasal-only masks on you. So did you go through a sleep clinic?
Correct.
I would check back with your sleep doctor at the sleep clinic and discuss that with them, because they should be able to find a smaller mask that might allow you to be more comfortable with the treatment.
And okay, let's assume that I still am claustrophobic with any type of CPAP. What would be some alternative? You said something about a dental implant that you would push your jaw out, or are there some other things on the market now, are they still under study?
Well, let me first say that if you're having a lot of trouble with claustrophobia with a mask, that one of the things that we recommend is to try to accommodate to the mask, to basically go through kind of a behavioral desensitization. And again, we find that a lot of people who are initially claustrophobic or think they can't tolerate it actually can get accommodated to it. And it's a matter of doing something like putting the mask on during the daytime, not at bedtime, while you're sitting up, maybe just breathing through the mask alone, not even hooking
it
up.
That.
You've done all that. But you have to get a small mask. The other, not the big one that's covering your face. The other issue is to talk with your sleep physician and find out, do you have positional apnea? Are you someone who, when you're not on your back, that it's not so severe? Would other treatments like weight loss be helpful to you? Are you a surgical candidate? There are oral appliances. They're not really implants. It's like a mouth guard or something that covers up your upper and lower dentures that you just put on at night, and it helps pull your outer jaw forward. So it's like jutting your chin out at night. And sometimes that and staying off your back may be sufficient to open up the airway. And again, that would be something to check with your sleep doctor about, to see whether you'd be a candidate for other treatments. But again, the important thing, particularly if your apnea is severe, is to get it treated. And some treatment, or at least decreasing the severity of the apnea, is better than no treatment.
Yeah,
I really appreciate that. That is
good.
That is excellent. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank
you. I hope you
find
something that's comfortable to use. Yes.
It's I had the problem with the nasal one, just because I don't always breathe through mm-hmm. my nose, and so it was. So that's why I have kind of the full face mask. But I would like to have the nose one, just because it's less. There's less on your face.
Yeah, and again, if you're not breathing through your nose, that's something that needs to be figured out. Is why is there a problem getting air in that way? Is there an obstruction or something else that can be treated or corrected?
Yeah. Well, it's been great talking with you today, and I wanted to, again, direct people to your website, and because they can find out more about, well, get some good tips, but also find out more about the studies that mm-hmm. are going on.
Yes.
And so to go there, you go to my website, actually, or my Facebook page, excuse me, at the Larry Mueller Show, and you can find, just click on it, the Wisconsin Sleep. It's mm-hmm. wisconsinsleep.org.
Right. And then for people who are at other parts of the state, if you want to find an accredited sleep clinic in your area, I recommend that you go to the American Academy of Sleep Medicine website. And that address is www.aasmnet.org, or just Google the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. And there's a section there for patients, and any place in the country you are, they'll have a list of accredited sleep centers with qualified sleep specialists who can help you.
Dr. Benka, thank you very
much. Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Ruth Benka, our guest from the Wisconsin Sleep Laboratory and Clinic. Thank you for listening.